and really excited about talking to Cynthia Kaufman. First time I've done so on my new show. Used to talk to her pretty regularly on my old show. And she's in the governor's race. She's also the top attorney in the state of Colorado, the attorney general. Obviously, this Michael Hancock story is brewing, and 710 picked up on the interview by Tony Kovaleski on Channel 7 and has just been driving the heck out of this story. And as more and more comes out, and we're going to get another piece of the puzzle on the Craig Silverman show when he interviews Stuart Shapiro, a former whistleblower out of Denver. The idea of obstruction of justice seems to be rearing its ugly head. And so that's when law enforcement maybe can get involved and we can get to the bottom of this story. So one of the many things I hope to talk to Cynthia Kaufman about as she joins us now is that. And so, Cynthia, good morning. Thank you.
Good morning, Randy. Good to be with you on your show.
Yes, indeed. How are you today and how is your campaign going?
Well, you're right. It's a gorgeous Colorado day. I'm hoping to get some time outside at least for a few minutes. I was pleased to hear Jeff Hayes come on and rally the troops, because attendance was pretty low at caucus night in the places I went. And I am concerned that we need to get Republicans really fired up about not only the governor's race, but a lot of our other statewide and local races. So, thanks for getting that message out to people that we need them involved.
Yeah, the idea, set aside all your differences with the Republican Party, set aside your complaints about individual candidates for whatever reason, as this process moves forward, just put in the forefront of your mind Governor Jared Polis, government Kerry Kennedy. With redistricting coming up, the census, how that could change the face of Colorado for another decade. There has not been a more important election in Colorado since the last time we were facing this kind of a hurdle and approaching redistricting. And we got hurt in redistricting last time. We got to try and make sure that can't happen again. Having a Republican governor is so important. I'm definitely going to give you some time to talk about your governor's race. Obviously, the hot topic, and I've been out of town for the last 10 days, so I've been trying to follow this story from the outside. I know Craig is going to advance it. The terms obstruction of justice are coming up. But I heard Peter Boyles yesterday saying that they'd reached out to your office and they couldn't get a call back, and they were really making it sound like you didn't want to talk about this, and you're here today. So tell me what the sequence of events was for you in hearing from the show or finding out more about this potential obstruction of justice.
Yeah, thank you. I really appreciate the opportunity to clarify things, and I'm sorry that we got things off track, that Peter and his producer seem to have misrepresented the facts. But I got a text message from the producer asking me if I could come on the show to talk about the situation with the mayor and whether there was obstruction of justice. And I was on the road on the Eastern Plains and had my public information officer from the Attorney General's office contact the producer. They spoke the same day, and she explained that we had only gotten the letter, I believe it was the 6th of March. It was either the 5th or the 6th of March, so Monday or Tuesday. And we're reviewing the letter to see if we have jurisdiction in the case. And that really, if I came on the show, I couldn't talk about any specifics because of the status of the investigation or our inquiry into whether we had jurisdiction. So we have not begun an investigation. I want to be clear about that. If frankly, I don't think the Attorney General's office and the state's attorney has jurisdiction in this case at this point.
All right. Well, let's talk about three things that you've already said, and I'll certainly let you advance the story. You mentioned misrepresented the facts, and I didn't hear what Peter or the producer said about it, and I don't. But what I did hear didn't sound much different than what you said. That you had, they reached out to you. You had, and somebody, not you, but somebody got back and said, "Hey, we just got this, so we don't have much to say." What facts do you think were misrepresented?
Well, we didn't say we wouldn't talk to Peter. We explained the reason why we didn't have information.
Fair enough.
So that's that's my concern. And I always, you know, I want people to know that the Attorney General will speak in a radio program or public forum whenever she can. So it's not an effort to dock a conversation.
All right.
But.
So you mentioned a letter, and there are two letters floating around that I'm aware of. One is from the Fraternal Order of Police. They've already come out and said that Mayor Hancock should resign. And then there's another one that went out, I guess, last November to multiple media outlets. I haven't seen it. I don't know what's in it. That seems to be what led to the Tony Kovaleski interview of the police detective who was inappropriately texted by Mayor Hancock. Which letter or letters do you have?
Like you, I have not seen the November letter, and our office did not receive a copy of that. We received the FOP letter that was sent to the governor, and we were CC'd on that. And we got that simultaneous with the news reports at the beginning of this week.
So explain for folks, you said that the Attorney General's office does not likely have jurisdiction over this issue. So explain, what is the role of the Attorney General in Colorado? What jurisdiction do you have, and what kind of flexibility do you have in picking and choosing cases, what to defend, what to pursue?
In Colorado, original criminal jurisdiction is with our district attorneys, except in some very specific matters that Colorado statute has given authority to the Attorney General's office. And those include securities fraud and white-collar crime, workers' compensation cases, cases where there is a crime that crosses jurisdictional lines. So something like a drug trafficking case that is in multiple jurisdictions in the state of Colorado, we can take that case and investigate it and go to the state grand jury with it, but we don't do that without talking to all of the district attorneys involved first. There are states where the Attorney General is essentially the DA is the first place that people go to file charges and have a case prosecuted. We are not set up that way in Colorado. So people can't come to us and say, gee, it looks like there's corruption. We need you to investigate. We either have to be asked by a district attorney or the governor has to ask us to investigate a situation. So I think it's confusing as people see attorney general, law enforcement official, and think that we can step in and look at allegations such as the ones made by the FOP, but we don't have that ability in Colorado.
All right. To make it clear, though, for instance, Governor Hickenlooper could direct you to investigate a potential obstruction of justice in the city and county of Denver. And it sounds like the district attorney of Denver or other district attorneys for their own jurisdictions could also make similar requests for you to investigate potential crimes in their jurisdictions. Is that accurate?
That's accurate.
About the
DAs usually want to keep things for themselves
of course.
In their local jurisdiction, which is understandable.
Well, it's the last thing I would expect is the Denver DA to be asking you to investigate the Denver mayor. That ain't happening, that's for sure. What about the state legislature? Can the state legislature make requests of the Attorney General's office to pursue an investigation?
No, they can't.
All right, so they'd have to pass a law of some kind that gave you authority for something like that. If the governor were to say, hey, this needs to be looked at and I don't expect it, but just hypothetically, do you then have discretion to say yes or no, or are you his attorney, that office's attorney, and you are mandated to follow that request wherever it goes?
Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not aware that we've ever turned down a request from a governor, but they are rare. They're extraordinary circumstances because usually some other course of action is followed. But no, I wouldn't turn down a governor's request for an investigation.
If you were the governor, do you know enough about this story? Do you think it's significant enough? Would you instruct your Attorney General, George Brockler, we're just waving the magic wand and putting you guys in office for purposes of this hypothetical. Have you thought about whether you would instruct your attorney general to pursue obstruction of justice in the city and county of Denver?
You know, I haven't seen details, and maybe it's in this November letter that I haven't seen, but I haven't seen the obstruction allegations. I've seen what FOP has talked about in terms of the sexual harassment allegations and what they believe. Just looking at their letter again, they say they want ethical leadership in Denver. It doesn't rise to the what I've seen, and let me be very specific about that, doesn't appear to be a criminal charge. But, you know, without getting into it, I would never make a judgment because I haven't seen the facts. I haven't heard from people who have information. So I wouldn't make a judgment at all on what is or isn't there.
Let me ask you what will probably be my last question on that issue, and then we'll take our break and come back and talk about Cynthia Kaufman for governor. What are the political considerations in a situation like that? Would someone who is looking at possible criminal activity by a city's leader, but they're from the other party, you're a Republican, they're Democrats, do governors, do decision makers like that have to think about the politics of going after the other party? Or is this for you at least a black and white, if there's a violation of the law, this needs to be looked at kind of assessment?
That's certainly my perspective, and I think that's the expectation that people have of their elected officials, to remain impartial. And as Attorney General, that's our function. The governor is a policymaker, has a little bit different role in the situation, and people may be able to apply political pressure on governors that they can't on attorneys general.
Okay. All right, fair enough. Well, it's coming up on 8:20. Let's take our break. When we come back, we'll change hats and we'll talk about Cynthia Kaufman for governor. You put out a very powerful statement on General Jeff Sessions' decision to take legal action against California's sanctuary city policies. It's short enough. I'll read it when we come back, get you to talk about that, and then we'll move forward from there. Can you stay with us?
I can. Thank you.
All right, beautiful. Coming up on 8:20, Randy Corcoran, 710 KNUS.
News Talk 710.
Cynthia, have you gone to Wake Up with Randy Corcoran and clicked like?
Please. No, but I will as soon
please
as I'm off the radio.
Do. Please do. Michael, did you produce? Okay, Michael. Michael knows better. We just got to hit that 2,500 before the end of the show. Anyway.
Will you like my campaign website in return?
I will, absolutely.
Okay,
yeah.
There you go.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I have... And I'm sorry, you know, that I can't say, hey, I'm with you, I'm on board. I'm a wide open slate right now. And part of my uncertainty right now is because, and when it comes to your campaign, is that I just haven't heard that much about it. So we've got some time. And give me an idea. I think you would have been a shoe-in to be reelected as the Attorney General. And you won the only statewide race that Republicans won 4 years ago. You won by a very significant percentage, as I recall. You can correct me if I'm wrong on any of those facts. So you could have easily done another term as Attorney General, I would think. The Attorney General in Colorado often goes, and almost historically, always goes to the Republican in this state. So what was your thinking about not, you know, finishing a second term there and jumping into the governor's race now?
Well, just real quickly, I didn't win the only statewide race because, of course, the treasurer and secretary of state also won, but we didn't get the governor's seat.
Yeah.
We came close, but we didn't, and we've got to get it this time.
You see why I should never rely on my memory or my own grasp of the facts.
I did win by the highest percentage of any of the statewide elected officials, and the governor and I have ribbed each other about this because he got 3,800 more votes, but he also had hundreds of thousands of more people vote in his election. That's one of the reasons that I can win as governor and can win against a Paulus or a Kennedy, because I'm able to pull from not only Republicans, but from independents. And once in a while, a Democrat will vote for me, believe it or not. But those are important things to think about. And the electability of a governor, because you were speaking earlier of how important it was, it is to have a Republican in the governor's mansion during reapportionment and redistricting. And we have lost the last two decades in those court cases in Denver District Court, where we have a lot of Democrat judges, and we've got to get it back. We're going to have another congressional district, and we have an opportunity to have more fair lines drawn in Colorado. So it's extremely important to have a Republican governor.
I think we've got a great candidate running for your position. Attorney General George Brockler is just rock solid. He's an excellent campaigner. He just answers all the questions well, and that's terrific. But you would have probably been a lock to keep that job. So what was your thinking in moving into the governor's race after only one term as Attorney General?
Sure. You got to remember, I've been in the AG's office 13 years because I was there 10 years under John Southers. So I've had an opportunity as Attorney General in my travels to talk to people around the state about things that concern them. And what I saw and what motivated me to run for governor is that there are problems that need solutions, and they can't be solved by the Attorney General. They require the policy-making authority and position and bully pulpit of the governor. And those are things I want to do on behalf of Colorado. Transportation, affordable health care, public education funding, enforcement of marijuana regulations, keeping people safe in their communities. These are things that require a governor with a cabinet, with the ability to appoint boards and commissions and judges. And I'm ready to take that step. It's an open seat. We need to return it to a Republican. I was the highest vote getter statewide for the Republicans. And I think I'm ultimately the candidate who can win it.
Well, let's talk about some of the issues then. Now, for the liberty activists, for the rock-ribbed grassroots conservatives in the Republican Party, your position on the abortion issue is a negative. Mm-hmm. So talk a minute. First, explain what that is, and then explain why your position makes you more electable, when we all know that the top target has to be to not have a Democrat governor, not only for the future of Colorado, but especially for reapportionment after this 2020 census.
Yeah, and I appreciate the question and the opportunity to directly answer the folks on the issue of abortion. First of all, my position hasn't changed, and so it's been the same. I am personally in favor of life. I would choose life. But I also am a pragmatist, and I recognize that our United States Supreme Court has said that there is a right of a woman to choose an abortion, and that Supreme Court's protecting that under federal law and equal protection. I don't think a governor of Colorado is going to change that law. So I think the focus has to be on reducing the number of abortions, on promoting adoption, which I am such a firm believer in. I encourage young women whenever they have come to me, and I even had a young woman stay with me when I lived in Atlanta until she could have her child and put it up for adoption because she wasn't welcome in her home. I think adoption is the choice, and I want to encourage that. I also want to empower young women to make good choices in their lives so they don't get in a situation where they have to decide what to do about a pregnancy. And Colorado has been reducing the abortion rate, and that's a significant thing for us, 30% to 40% reductions. But we won't be there until we don't have abortion. I do not believe in late-term abortion. I do not believe in public funding for abortion. I believe that parents should be involved in the decision of a minor in whether or not to have an abortion. That should not be something a minor gets to decide on their own and do without parental consent. So I'm in favor of all those restrictions on abortion and believe that the only way that we can, as a society, not have abortion is if we empower women to make different choices. And that's my philosophy on abortion. So I don't like it, and I don't fit in the category of pro-choice. I've looked at the list of everything that is pro-choice, and there are a lot of things there I disagree with.
Would you use the bully pulpit of the governor's office to advocate for life, to advocate for those life options versus abortion, mm-hmm. even if you're unwilling to, you know, go up against the Supreme Court and the current mm-hmm. status of the law?
Well, we'd have to have a case to go up against the,
sure,
the Supreme
course.
Court.
But in your advocacy.
You know, as a lawyer. But yes, I mean, I think that I worked with Jane Norton and was in the Owens administration when we took funding from Planned Parenthood. Actually, Planned Parenthood decided not. They didn't want to go for federal funding anymore because we were putting the pressure on them to meet the law in Colorado. And we worked, Jane Norton worked on adoption regulation and making the adoption process move more quickly for people who want to bring a child into their home. And I think those are things that I absolutely would advocate for and share my position with people that adoption should be the choice and not abortion.
All right. One of the other big hot button issues for people who will be attending state assembly and helping nominate our candidate for governor is the Jack Phillips freedom of religion case. And so as attorney general, you are in a position where I, and maybe you can explain how much discretion you have in how, what cases you defend and how you advocate for them. And then what your personal belief and vision is with regard to the issue of freedom of religion and, you know, contrast that against our public accommodations law here in Colorado.
Well, as Attorney General, I represent clients. I represent state agencies, boards and commissions, and statewide elected officials. In the case of the Masterpiece Cake Shop, the Attorney General's office has a client, and that's the Colorado Civil Rights Commission. This case started under my predecessor, John Southers, and then became my case when I became Attorney General. The office made the decision that, and this is how we make decisions. We look at whether or not there is a legally defensible argument on behalf of the client in a situation. And if there is, then we represent that client, whether we agree or not with the position that has been taken. If our office says that there is no legal argument, which we, under our ethical responsibilities, believe it can be sustained, then we would choose not to represent a client. And the governor then gets to appoint someone to serve as attorney in that situation. I think it is a dereliction of duty as attorney general to allow that to happen. If there is a defensible argument that we can make in court to uphold a state law, in this case, it's the public accommodation law. And certainly the precedent from the Supreme Court is that a public accommodation law, like Colorado's, is legal and is constitutional. So that in a nutshell is the legal background on it. And then let's go ahead and shift. Randy, why don't you ask me, you don't mind reposing your question?
Well, sure. Yeah. Well, the mm-hmm. second part was, what's your personal perspective, your mm-hmm. personal commitment and the principle that you, mm-hmm. You know, would live your own life around, or if you were an mm-hmm. independent practitioner, you know, the kind of case that mm-hmm. you might go and defend? Where do you stand on the issue?
Yeah, I certainly, yes, I believe in religious liberty and in the constitutional guarantees that we all have as Americans. What you have in the Masterpiece case is a conflict between state law and what people believe are religious liberties that are guaranteed under the United States Constitution. The reason the United States Supreme Court took this case took the Masterpiece Cake Shop case is because I think they see that there are differing interpretations of the law from different jurisdictions, and there is something here that they wanted to address. And based on the listening to the argument and the questions that they had, I think they're trying to decide if they can carve out an exception for Mr. Phillips in this case that won't destroy the efficacy of public accommodation laws across the country.
All right. And what's your belief system around it?
Mm-hmm. I absolutely believe in protecting religious liberty. I also believe we have to, in some cases in this country, we have had to create laws against discrimination. And I tend to agree that in this case, that Mr. Phillips was being asked to provide a cake to a couple for a gay wedding, that the expression in the cake is not the issue. The issue is whether or not there is discrimination in sales and in serving a particular customer. And there, I think you get down to a legal issue that the court has to resolve. But I wouldn't have allowed the case to go forward with our representation if I didn't believe that there was an argument on behalf of the Civil Rights Commission that they made the right decision.
It's 20 minutes to go until 9 o'clock. I've got good news and bad news for you, Cynthia.
All right.
Which the bad news is you're too late to become my 2,500th like on Wake Up with Randy Corcoran, because blew through that to 2,511. So thanks, everybody, for doing that. I'm still going to be watching for that like from you, though. And I'll do the same. If you can stay with us, here's what I'd like to do. We didn't even talk yet about the powerful statement you released on Jeff Sessions' decision to sue California for their sanctuary city policies. We haven't talked about the progress in your campaign, fundraising, any of those things, or how mm-hmm. people can help you. If you can stay with us through this last break before the end of our show, we'll give you all the time that you want to answer those questions and talk about those things. Can you do it?
You bet, yes.
All right, it's 19 minutes to go until 9 o'clock. I'm Randy Corcoran. We continue our conversation with Attorney General and gubernatorial candidate Cynthia Kaufman. Stay with us, 710 KNUS. All right, just a few minutes left as we wrap up our lengthy conversation with Attorney General and gubernatorial candidate Cynthia Kaufman. The listeners of 710 KNUS just literally rock. I noticed my Facebook page, Wake Up with Randy Corcoran, at 2,475. I made the target to get over 2,500 before the show ended. 40 people have gone there. We're at 2,515 now. So everybody, thank you very much. By the way, I know Stephen Tubbs has a new show page up. Make sure you give that a like. I don't know if Peter Boyles has one or not, Chuck and Julie, but of course, we have our 710 KNUS pages as well, and you can download the podcasts, get the app so you can listen on your smartphone. So many different ways to stay in touch with all of us here at 710 KNUS. We talked a lot about the Michael Hancock story, especially in the first hour. Craig Silverman will be here at 9 o'clock, and he'll be advancing that story with some new information when he interviews whistleblower Stuart Shapiro in Craig's Lawyer Lounge. You're definitely going to want to stick around for that. But now I want to give Cynthia Kaufman some time to talk a little bit about her gubernatorial campaign. You came out with a statement about Jeff Sessions' decision to take legal action against sanctuary city policies in California. And you said, "I applaud him for standing up to lawlessness in California, taking legal action against three of the state's so-called sanctuary city laws. Sanctuary city policies are disrespectful to law-abiding Americans and all immigrants who followed the laws. They came to our country to pursue the American dream. California lawmakers blatantly disregarded federal immigration law when they passed these policies." And here's the real clinker the shining moment here. "As governor, I will not allow Colorado to become a sanctuary state. I will push back against harmful sanctuary city policies and instruct our state's law enforcement officials to hold illegal immigrants accountable." Now, we heard the story of the illegal immigrant who drove his truck into a semi-truck, killed the semi-truck mm-hmm. driver, fled. Denver Sheriff's Office says we cannot turn him over to ICE. What influence would you have or be able to exert on a situation like that as governor of the state of Colorado?
Well, what the Denver Sheriff's Office does And I'm going to meet with the city attorney and talk to her about this this week. They don't honor ICE detainers, which is a form that an ICE official can fill out asking a law enforcement agency to hold a person who could be deported. And they require a warrant or something called a retainer. They say that a detainer can violate someone's constitutional rights, okay? So that's how I understand Denver is making its decisions. Don't agree, but that's how they make their decision. They, in this case, what they said to me and what the Denver District Attorney said to me is that they want to keep Ivan Zamarripa Castaneda's in the United States and prosecute him here for that accident and for that death. And if they turn him over to ICE, he will be deported. He will go to Mexico. He can come right back across the border. He never stands trial for his crime, and he never does time in the United States for a crime committed in the U.S. That's what they say, and that's their argument for the way that they handle the case. But as I said, I'm going to have a conversation with them more carefully about this. They're a home rule city. They get to make some of those decisions for themselves under Section 6, Article 20 of the United States Constitution. But we have to get to a point where we do not have sanctuary city policies that allow people to commit crimes and to have our local law enforcement officials not complying with federal law. The governor has a bully pulpit, has a position of power and persuasion over cities. And I don't think that Governor Hickenlooper has exercised that, perhaps not at all, because perhaps he agrees with the policies. I'm not sure. But it creates a reputation for Colorado that's not unlike California's. In this situation where we have cities that are disobeying federal law and federal law enforcement. And I do not want us to have that reputation in Colorado.
All right, Cynthia, we've got maybe 2 minutes left. So it's obvious what if Jared Polis or Kerry Kennedy become governor, what will happen to sanctuary policy in the state of Colorado. Kerry Kennedy really knocked Polis hard in the Democrat caucuses. So it could emerge if you become the Republican nominee, our woman candidate, Cynthia Kaufman, versus their woman candidate, Kerry Kennedy. Take about 90 seconds and make your best pitch why people should get interested in the candidacy of Attorney General Cynthia Kaufman for governor.
Well, I've proven that I can win, and I've proven that I can win across the board, that I can appeal to independents, to Democrats. I think some of that is definitely a woman pulling a woman's vote. Whether you like it or not, that's the case. I am a strong campaigner. I can get around the state as I am now, traveling the state, talking to folks. And I've taken my campaign to the grassroots. I'm going through the assembly process. I'm much happier about that than I would be about petitioning. I'm not a Bush. I'm not a Romney. I'm not a Mitchell who has his own wealth. I can't buy this election. I have to earn it. And I think that's what the people of Colorado want. And I think that's what our grassroots voters want. I will come out. I will answer any question that people have. I believe in this process. I believe that the way we elect a governor should be through the assembly process. And so that's what I am doing with my campaign. I want people to go to our website at cynthia2018.com. I want people to send me emails at cynthia@cynthia2018.com. And I want people to engage with us. I will engage with them. Spent time on the Eastern Plains and in Northeast Colorado this week, and it was great to be with those folks and hear their issues. There's a lot to be done. We have to have a Republican governor to do it. We cannot let the state have another Democrat governor. We just cannot.
All right, Cynthia. Well, thanks very much for coming on. You were very generous with your time. We addressed the issue regarding Peter's show. We talked about the Hancock situation, and we spent a good amount of time, I think, getting the people who will determine at Assembly who our Republican candidate is, more time to get to know you. Very, very grateful for your time. Hope to see you out there on the campaign trail.
Thank you. Thank you, Randy.
Better believe it. Take care.